This is a 911 Plus production.
What's up, everybody? It's your host, Adam Marciano, and today on Unscripted, I chat with the very talented Stephen Yaffe, who plays Beelzebub on Ice Cream, the demon character on episode 4, The Flashback. We talk about his approach on voicing a demon character and what it was like to deal with that material. We talk about his career and the film industry, making your own work, and I even asked him a personal question, which was, how is it like to be on Supernatural? All this and more on this episode of Unscripted. How's it going, man?
It's going good. Where are you? Are you in Vancouver?
I'm in Toronto. I know. Everyone's always like, where are you? I'm always like either on either side of the country, but I've been here for like the last year. So how about you? Are you, you're in Toronto, right?
Yeah, I'm in Toronto. Yeah.
Did you ever live in Vancouver?
No, I've spent a little bit of time out there, just like infrequently and just a little bit at a time, but not consistently. No.
So I just wanted to jump right back into everything. So I'm doing this show because I feel like I want to kind of spotlight these actors who've been on the show. You guys have worked so hard and done so well, and people have loved your guys' performances. And I thought, why not show kind of the person behind the voice, right? And so I don't know. Do you remember how we met? Because I don't personally remember.
I don't like. I know it was through. I know it was somehow through LB Acting Studio where I work, but I don't remember like the moment.
Yes.
I don't remember the moment. I don't remember if it was originally like at a party or at some kind of like industry thing, or if it was there. I don't like exactly remember, which is
because I don't think I ever took a class with you, but I was thinking today, I was like, maybe I did like a self tape with you, but it would have been like so long ago. I just feel like you've always been around and I've always been following you, and we've been following each other, and we've just known of each other. And so when we ran into each other at LB Lewis Ballmander's birthday party in the summer, I remember we were just getting ready to start Ice Cream, and I was thinking, I was like, who's going to play this role of Beelzebub? Because I literally, like, it's such a crazy role. And I just met you, I just ran into you at that point, and you were like, oh, hey, like, how's it going? Like, congrats on all the podcast stuff. And I was like, thank you. And then I didn't think of you because I knew we were going to record in Vancouver, and I knew you were here. And then we ended up coming here to record a day, and I was like, and then I hit you up because I was like, oh my gosh, yes, of course. So that's kind of how it all went down. So I guess we can start. Let's start at the beginning for you, because I actually don't know much about your whole history and your life. Where were you born? Where were you raised? How did you start? When was your first inkling of acting? Tell me all the things.
I was born and raised in Toronto. So
okay. Good old Toronto boy.
all Toronto boy. It's funny. I think I was 10 or 11. My parents thought that I was very much into sports and stuff like that. And my parents were sort of saying, you need to expand your horizons. And they had a close family friend who put their kid in this theater camp in the summer. So I was a little like hesitant. I didn't know what to expect. I'd never really done any kind of theater, not even really at school. Like my school didn't really have a great theater department. Well, I guess not many like elementary schools do, but anyway. and I went there. It was a 3-week just summer camp, and I loved it, and I fell in love with it. And we did this little play at the end of the 3 weeks, and I remember like vividly being on, like having a great time the 3 weeks, but then where all parents or friends or family, whatever, would come to see the last show. And I remember that I said a line and I got a laugh, and like, I still remember that feeling. And I think that I've been chasing that high ever since. Wow. And so then the next year I went back again, the year after. And then I was like 15 or 16 and I became like, you know, an assistant camp teacher, counselor or whatever. And I then worked there for a few years, and I spent like a lot of my summers. I spent my whole summers there.
Wow.
And then when I was 17, I started to get a little more serious about it. And one of the teachers there was like, if you want to pursue this and take this a little more seriously, you should take some classes. You should do this here. There's this person I can put you in contact with, and then that eventually led to an agent, and the rest was history. But that's where it started.
So when you started going out for auditions, did you find that, were you having some kind of quick success, or were you finding it a little bit of a struggle and it wasn't as roses and dandies as, you know, it was at camp? You know, it was, it's the industry, it started to get actually hard. Or what was your experience at the beginning of all that?
I had a really weird experience in terms of I had a couple commercial auditions.
Yeah.
And then I think my third audition ever was for a series. It was for like a guest star recurring on a series. And I didn't book the role I auditioned for, but they offered me another role. It was a smaller role. And that was like my third audition ever. And my thought was, yeah, okay, this is really easy. Yes. And, you know, it was like just like this principal sort of recurring role. But I was in like 5 or 6 episodes. I had a lot of days, even though I didn't have a ton of lines. And I was just like, this is the life. It's just going to be amazing from here on out. And then my next audition after that was terrible. The one after that, my agent was like, casting said you bombed. Like, so
oh no.
I went from thinking I was on top of the world to then going, oh my goodness, like, have I already blown it?
And then how did you kind of mentally get to the point where you're like, you know, I have to, it's long term, it's longevity, it's a craft, and I'm not going to get everything. How did you kind of be okay with auditioning is, I guess, my question, and become confident in it?
I think that I became quite obsessive in terms of saying to myself, okay, I know what that feeling is like, that I technically bombed that. I didn't really quite understand why. Now I've understood why, because I was lucky enough to have an agent that had a good relationship with those casting directors. Those casting directors told them exactly what I had done that had made me bomb that, yada, yada. Breaking that down with like a coach, breaking it down by myself and going, okay, so this is like what I have to, in a sense, attend to. This is where I have to get better at this. And then becoming obsessive about that so that I didn't have that feeling again of getting a phone call saying, yeah, you really messed this one up. And it was just, again, getting a better understanding of myself. I don't think that, like, until the last 5 or 6 years, I actually really got an understanding of, like, a grapple on the mindset of it all.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that was something that I didn't really attend to. I also would become so obsessive over, like, auditions and work that sort of, you know, I'd get an audition and life would be on hold until that audition was over.
Yep.
Everything else took a backseat, whether that be friends, family, relationships. There was like everything came second to that audition. I don't think that's probably the healthiest way of...
Well, it's hard because you're putting, like you said, you're putting everything in, all the eggs in one basket. I relate to you in so many ways because I was the same thing. Auditions, I would put everything and that would become the first thing. I don't care. I'll pay any money for any studio to get the best tape. I just didn't care. I was like, this comes first. And then when you wouldn't get the job, it was just like so hard to deal with because you're like, I did everything I could. And so you have to come to terms eventually, I think, to realize that it's literally not you. Like, it is a part of, yes, but a lot of it doesn't have to do with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's something, again, like when you start making your own work and you're making casting decisions and you realize it, that's where you really realize what goes into it and why certain decisions are made. And it really isn't a thing of like, it's not that we don't like you or think you're not great. It's just, this doesn't work. Or it could be like a scheduling thing. It could be something so small. And
you're too handsome. Our lead isn't that handsome. And we can't have you outshine him. You know, to be like that.
I have a client.
Yeah.
Very good looking guy. Very like devilishly handsome. He has been second choice this year on 5 or 6 jobs. And they literally have said each time, he's too good looking.
And only our industry that would happen.
Only. And part of me feels bad. And the other half's like, well, that's a good, what a problem to have.
Right.
you know, like, you'll be fine.
Yeah, you'll be fine. Yeah. And then how did you just, I guess, was it through you doing your own stuff, you realized that, you know, oh, it's not me. There's other variables. Is that how you kind of came to terms with it? Yeah.
Yeah, that, and I think it's just, there was a certain point where it was sort of like, I think as an actor, you have to come to terms and you almost make a deal with yourself or with the industry that this is how it's going to be. That you're going to really want things. You're going to really want this opportunity. You're going to really like this, and you're not going to get it a lot of the times. And the choice is to either let that destroy your joy in auditioning and in the craft, or you just, it's part of the job. I think all jobs have that. It's not just actors, it's all jobs. You know, there's parts of it that are really difficult. And it's sort of like, Well, I have to take the good with the bad, and it's really bad, and it really hurts, and it really sucks. But it's part of it.
I think that you have to also just train your brain. It took me a long time to get here, but train your brain to like delete the audition once you're done. Like you finish the audition, you reflect on it, maybe on the way home, see what you did well, what you didn't do well, and then just let it go. And it's so much easier said than done, because there's obviously different times where you're like, oh, I really want this, and you're like checking your email a lot. But eventually you'll get to a point where, like, there's been times where I leave an audition and I'm like, I don't even remember the lines. It's that quick sometimes for me, because I'm just, you get used to it. You get your brain trained, and maybe that's a trauma thing. I don't know. Maybe you're just blocking it out. I don't know, but it works.
I think that's the best way to do it. I think that's the healthiest way. I remember once hearing Michael B. Jordan talk about auditioning, and that as soon as he would leave a room, he would physically take the sides and put them in the garbage or recycling bin or something. Right. And it was like, if I get a callback or I ever hear about this, I can always reprint them, or I can look back on them. But it's like the physical letting go.
Yeah. No, so I think for sure you have to do that. It's like an energy thing. It's like you're throwing it out, you know, and then if it's meant to be, it'll come back to you.
That's it.
So with all this said, then I want to ask you, what has been your worst audition ever? Because I know you definitely must have had one. Everyone does.
I guess like it really was one of those, one of the first two that I had, where I was driving home and I was on the Gardner, and I'd actually thought it went okay. And that's when my agent at the time called.
He's like, you bombed. Like,
yeah, well, no, they were like, how did, and it had only been like 20 minutes, but I guess I was one of the last people in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, how did it go? And I was like, I think it went pretty well. And they were like, okay, so Steven, it didn't go well. Here's why. that was one of the worst. Another one that was really bad too was, I came in for this role, and the character was a mascot at like a school. Like they were like, you know, a mascot. And it was sort of vague what type of mascot, but I went full out with wardrobe. Like I didn't have a mascot, but I had all these like props and all this stuff. And I walked in, and before I even did it, the casting director was like, are you going to use all of that? that one was really, that one still to this day. And then, you know what? Sorry, one more even. I guess I've had a whole bunch. This one sticks out in my mind, and it wasn't from an embarrassing aspect. It was the one of the worst because of how I felt I dealt with the situation. And what it was it was a lot of dialogue. It was like an 8-page audition, really difficult dialogue, and I worked my butt off. And then I got to the waiting room, and everybody looked completely different than me. And as opposed to thinking of that as a good thing,
mm-hmm.
I let it like self-sabotage, and I was like, oh, why am I here? That's what they're looking for. It's not me, yada, yada. And I went into the room with such a like defeated attitude, and I got so nervous, and I didn't do what I'd wanted, and I didn't like let anything.
You're like, I give up. Yeah.
I'd given up, I think, before I'd even said a word. And that still, I think, is like one of the worst that I had done. The others were The others were embarrassing, but like kind of out of my control to a degree. It didn't really
have you were learning new. Still. Yeah.
Yeah. This was something where it felt like a disappointment to myself.
Mm-hmm. And you booked the job, didn't you?
No.
Another question I had is actually, cause I'm always curious about hearing these people's stories and stuff. I've done a bunch of interviews now, but I wanted to know what your parents' thoughts were when you told them, "Mom, Dad, I'm going to do this professionally." Because I feel like all parents, they have either they're very supportive or they're very much like, maybe try going to school or something else. What was your parents' reaction to this?
I think I'm one of the lucky ones in terms of they were very supportive from day one, and they have been ever since. And so I'm very lucky in that regard. The only time they ever had concern was that, like, once I decided I was going to pursue this and take this seriously, I was like, yeah, 16 or 17, mm-hmm. grade 11 high school. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is what I want to do. I have no interest in, like, grade 11 math. And they saw the focus that I had, so they were quite, I think, happy about that, but also a bit concerned because at the time it was sort of like, really, I put no time or energy into my schoolwork. Everything was into acting, and I was like so driven in that way. I think they were a little concerned with that. It was like, well, you are going to graduate, right? High school, like, you got to do that. But other than that, very supportive.
Do you find that, because when you started the industry, even when I started, the industry is so different than it is today. There was no streaming service. There was no, obviously now self-tapes are the main thing. Like, do you find that it was easier back then or now? And I guess it's kind of an open-ended question, but I just want to know your opinion.
Well, it's easier to get self-tapes done because when I start, I sound like I feel old. When I started,
you're not old.
My first self-tapes were on VHSs, not even DVDs. My first, I think, 2 years of self-tapes. And so, like, what you would do is you would go into a studio or with a coach or something, and you would do the takes on a VHS. And if you had to redo the take, you had to rewind that tape each time. It took forever, right? Like,
wow.
You would do a 2-minute take and then, oh no, we're not using that take, so you got to rewind it. But let's say there were multiple scenes. So you would do the first scene, you'd get that done. You want to do scene two? Okay, but each time we have to rewind to the point that scene one ended to start scene two again.
And if you can't make sure it's a second or a minute more because it will cut it off, right? Like, you have to make sure it's at a perfect spot. Yeah, oh my God.
So, like, imagine how much time that took. And then, you would take that VHS and drive it to your agency. And at the end of the day, UPS or Canada Post or whoever would come to the agencies and they would pick up all the VHS tapes and then send them out to Vancouver, LA, wherever. And, like, best case, like, I mean, they were always, like, expedited and they, but, like, still you wouldn't hear for a very long time.
Right.
Because somebody would have to pop in each VHS, watch the tape, take it out with the next one. So, you know, in a way, that was a lot harder, but you were going up against a lot less people, because think about all the time that would take for, like, a casting director to put in each tape.
Right.
They weren't able to see as many people. So if you were one of the lucky ones being seen for that job, you had a better shot at booking it.
Right.
So I think it was like 2 years after I started, then everything went into DVD. Mm-hmm. Now that was easier in terms of recording and takes and all that, but still it was the same thing. You would have to physically take that DVD to your agency and it would get shipped off. Yeah. So.
My grandparents were in the industry and they told me that back in the 80s, 90s, and I'm sure you know this, but, like, they would have to, when you get an audition, you'd have to go to the agency, pick up the actual physical script, and then go and do your thing. And then, yeah, it was kind of crazy. Or, like, if you booked a job, you have to go and pick up the script that day for the audition to be the next day. It was like chaos, you know? So now it's like crazy to think that we just in our home, have our own little studio, and we could just press record and then send it off. It's like literally within an hour we can have it all done. Whereas before it was like, it took like a day or so to do the whole thing.
Yeah, a lot easier these days to get it done. That's for sure.
I have a personal question. How was it like working on Supernatural? Because I know you did that. And that's such an iconic, legendary show. And that's shot in Vancouver, right? So you went to Vancouver for that?
I did. I was in Vancouver for a couple weeks for that a few years ago. Gosh, maybe it was 4 years ago already. Might have been 20.
Did you play a demon on that?
I played a vampire.
A vampire. Vampire. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. that was a ball. That was so much fun. Everybody on that show was so lovely. All pros, like, treated really well. Just such a fun environment. Got to, you know, the only thing was, because I was a vampire, I had to wear these retainer fangs.
Yes.
Oh, it would just cut up your tongue.
Did they fit you for it specifically for you? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the day before shooting, they had it made and all of that.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah. Which is so cool. And I got to go to this sort of, special effects warehouse thing where they did the fitting, but they had like all kinds of crazy props, and I got to kind of like just walk around a little bit. That was so cool.
That is so cool. Oh my God. What an iconic thing to like have on your resume, you know? That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely a highlight, like a mm-hmm. career highlight being on that show.
I want to ask you, like, have you ever done an audio drama or this kind of medium?
No, that's what's so interesting. Like, I've been doing this for 20 years. I've been in the business forever, but I haven't done a lot of voice, and I haven't done an audio drama like this. No. And so that's why it was such an exciting opportunity and something that, you know, I wanted to just jump in to do and play with. And it was
You haven't done like much voice in general, like commercials and stuff?
No.
Wow.
No, none. Never. Never. I never, never did any commercial voice, anything.
You have such a good voice, though. It's so weird. That's so weird. Have you told your agents that you wanted to do it, or just never came down?
Yeah. And, you know, like, and I'd gotten close a few times on some like really cool voice series and stuff, but never like quite landed the gig. And it was, it's always been such an interesting world, because I think the voice world, it's so bizarre. It feels so separate from the film and TV world. I understand that it is, but it feels like a completely different discipline in a way. And actually, I was talking, I saw at an event a couple nights ago, Emily Stranges, who's also, I know, on Ice Cream.
Yes, she's on the show.
And she does so much voice work, and we were just kind of talking about the differences and the intricacies and all, you know, all of that. And it's just, I don't know. It's always so interesting to me how much of a different discipline it is.
Well, I think that it's very hard to audition and book those jobs, because with film and TV, like, we at least can, it's about like, there's a lot of more variables, I think. Like, there's like our looks, there's like things that you could do with your facial expressions that could like be like, oh, the director would be like, oh, that was really dope, like I want him or whatever. There's just so many like more variables, where voice, it's like they kind of give you like a cartoon character if you're doing a cartoon, and they say, okay, make it up, and you're kind of going in blindly and you're hoping that they like what you do. Whereas I feel like film and TV, like I said, there's more you could do on camera that can convey the character, not just your voice. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. Well, that's the thing too, right? Yeah, it does feel like you're going in a little more blind. But I think that's also exciting in a way, because, I mean, there's so much creativity that's possible.
Yeah.
In that, and it was the same thing for like when you sent me this script for Beelzebub, and I was just like, what the hell?
I remember I wrote to you, I was like, I know this is really fucked up, so if you don't want to do this, it's so fine. And I remember telling you, I was like, you know, it's a demon, so have fun with it, you know?
Yeah, and again, like, it's just the creativity aspect of that, of going like, okay, well, they're open to this demonic voice, but also being anything, and just sort of like the different variables. And and I think like you go in with this just array of ideas and possibilities of what it could be. But I think my favorite, I was thinking about what it would be and a couple ideas and how I could play with it and just playing around vocally with some things. But then, like, one of my favorite directions that you gave very on before we even started recording, I think it's like when I got to the studio and we were just chatting for a few minutes before, was about like it, like you weren't looking for this like stereotypical, like, you know, weird mm-hmm. kind of demonic voice. It could be more like coming from a natural, genuine, authentic place within like where my vocal range is. And so that made me excited because it was also this thing of like, don't have to put on.
Right. And I think that's also where the fear is too. It's like what you're saying and just kind of the stillness and how you performed it was very scary and creepy. It wasn't like, it was more just like you were very confident and very like still in what you were saying, knew what you were saying. And that was jarring. To even just like listen to you say in the studio in the booth, I was like, I got like creeps from it, and I was like, that's so cool. And then we put like a little bit of a filter on it, and it just elevated it even more, you know. So yeah. I thought that you did so well. And so how was that experience for you, I guess, going into the booth, like not having done this really much before and not having the camera on you and just going doing it all through your voice? Was that hard, or did you find it more freeing because you didn't have the camera there? What was your experience?
Yeah, I think I definitely felt it. You know, what really helped, because I mean, I've done so much of like over the years of ADR, and ADR is something that I always find difficult in terms of gaining back the emotional access and authenticity mm-hmm. of the scene, because you shot it under certain circumstances, like maybe mm-hmm. 6 months earlier or something, and here you're coming back in and recording it, and it's only you in the booth. So for me, what was so freeing and liberating was that you were also in the booth with me, and we were opposite, yes. and we were playing off of each other's energy. And that's yes. what was so exciting to me. Had we just like recorded, like, you know, just my side of it, and I was even just, I don't know, like hearing yours or not, like mm-hmm. I think that wouldn't have been the same experience in the least. Like playing off of that energy is what you need, right?
That's so true, and that's exactly what I wanted. You know, we could have easily just gotten you to record remotely or just have you do your part, but I think that's like what made the magic of Cascadia and how people loved it so much, was because we were all recording in real time across from one another, and that was like so much fun. And I think there's, yes, you can have like a better, like a good performance doing it on your own. But I think there's also, like you said, like an authenticity to like doing it across from one another, almost like audition style, you know, when we do our classes or like on set. So that was really important for me to do. And I think it just elevated it to another level. So thank you so much for coming in and doing it. I really like, I'm so thankful. Cause I was kind of shy to ask you. You're such a legend. And I literally was like, I don't know if he'll do it. And you know, you were like, I'm so down. So you were the best. And we were all so excited. We were like jumping out in the control room. We were so happy when we were hearing you do like your single solo parts. We're like, oh my God. Yeah. So,
well, thanks for having me. No, I think that's also such an interesting thing too, just about like asking people to do things. It's like, you may as well do it. And if like, and I also always, I find for like the most part, people are very open and responsive and like receptive to wanting to do certain
things. They are.
Yeah.
Yeah. You always hear, you got to make your own work. You got to make your own work, and you got to help each other and stuff. And that's, you know, that's kind of what I want to do. And so when Beelzebub, which by the way, I pronounced the name wrong the entire time we were recording. I had to go back and re-record that. I didn't even realize, which I was saying, I think Beelzebub or something. It's Beelzebub. And I was saying it wrong the entire, even though I did my research, I just forgot how to say it. And then when I was editing it, I was like, oh my God, I've been saying it wrong this whole time. So luckily I was able to go back and change that. But how did you prepare? Because we kind of talked a little bit earlier about, you know, we're not putting on the demonic voice. How did mm-hmm. you prepare going into it, the choices and the things that you want to do for this role and this character?
Yeah, well, first it was getting some knowledge about like the history of Beelzebub. Now I don't even know how to say it. Because you know, I wasn't like incredibly familiar, right? So it was doing a lot of sort of reading, a lot of Googling, and then I went down the dark hole of YouTube, and there's so many people talking about Beelzebub and experiences with, and so I was just, I got like enamored. I went down this rabbit hole of watching these a lot of videos and people talking about Beelzebub, and just sort of, and then it just grew out of like an imagination of who it could be, why, you know, they're doing what they're doing.
Right.
And then a lot of it was, then also just like vocally playing with, with different, you know, vocal. But then it was also finding like something to connect to for me, as opposed to just what's going on in the script, but finding something in there that I could, you know, connect with.
And that's kind of what my next question was like, how did you make him real in your mind? Because yes, it's a demon and there's all these things, but there is some kind of connection that you can relate to. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like, you know, he feels a little betrayed, you know, by his servant. And so did you connect on that kind of level and like do kind of like pull things from your personal life in that way?
Yeah, like it is like I always try to keep it as simple as possible. I think that like I think it's actually really easy to connect to any kind of character, even if it's living in a world like this or that they're a quote unquote demon or whatever. It's exactly what you said. It's bringing it down to like the human primal emotions of like betrayal and this, and it's and then it's almost stripping away the context of the world we're living in to a degree, because I know that editing. And like you said, altering, like putting in some of the sound effects and put and playing around vocally after, that's going to take care of so much of the stuff I don't have to worry about. And so for me as the actor, it's just how can I simplify this to connect to it? And I usually just go back to one of the primal emotions and find a way in that way.
Because that's universal and that's relatable to everybody. And that's what makes, I think, horror and demons and all those things kind of... even more scarier, because people could be like, oh shit, that's like a real emotion that they're talking about or a real feeling that I can identify with. And when there's a connection there, that's what gives the horror, I think. Whereas if it's just kind of like a cartoon demon kind of character and it's kind of flat, it doesn't really translate, in my opinion.
100%.
And that's what I've learned through, you know, class and stuff. It's like, you know, I've played those villains and those characters, and it's like, how do you play a murderer? How do you play, like, how do you relate to, quote, I should say relate to that? And it's like, it's all about empathy, right? And it's like, okay, well, what made them do that? You know, maybe that's the contents isn't in the script, but you can kind of go back and say, okay, well, what happened in their childhood or what happened in their life that made them hate this type of person to become a serial killer? Or, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. No, I'm 100% on the same page, and it comes through empathy. Like, you have to find that way in, and it's always through empathy. Even if... they do horrific acts. Again, like, it's not your place to judge them if you're playing that character. If you're anybody else, sure, you can judge them.
Right, exactly. You are on the team of that character, and you have to have empathy for that character and try, even if you don't relate or agree with what they're doing, just try to put yourself in their shoes and see why they're doing it, and go do the research and do the work and do the back work of why they got to that place.
Exactly. So that you find an understanding. Yeah.
So let's talk about making our own work. As you know, that's something I've been doing lately and having so much fun doing it. But you've been doing it as well. I've been seeing on social media, is it a short film?
Yeah. So I just, I just wrapped up in the editing right now in post on a short film that I co-wrote it with Hannah Galway. She's an incredible actor. And then I directed and executive produced it.
Wow.
So it was an incredible experience, but a huge...
Is it called Fosters?
No, that's... Oh. So it's called Sun.
Okay.
Foster was the first short that I directed. I didn't write or produce that. I was just... I directed it. And that's just starting to do some festival stuff and cool. Get out there. But that one was an incredible experience, but I just directed. So I, you know, making it, but it wasn't I didn't do the producing. I didn't do the footwork and the groundwork on it, which I did on Sun. And so, it's such an exciting process. It's a crazy process.
It is.
But it, again, it gives you so much insight into like why decisions are made. And it's like, okay, we have to go with this person because we're doing this person and this person's here and totally. This and then schedule. And it's like, we would have loved to use this person, but like, it just didn't work out. Nothing personal. Yeah.
Literally, I think every actor should make their own, at least one project, just to see the level of like how actors at the bottom of the food chain when it comes to the production, because there's so many things that have to happen before they get to the actor. And then even then, like you said, scheduling, maybe they're not in town, or there's, you know, they're too tall and they're too short. There's so many things and it's out of your control. All you can control is doing the best work you can do and doing your and bringing truth to your stuff, and everything else, it's not up to you. It's not that you're a bad actor. It's just literally out of your control. That's it. And there's politics too. Yeah.
Oh, there's so much politics. But again, like it's what you just sort of said with like actors being like, sometimes it's almost like we, for instance, like we were dealing with this city getting permits and all of this stuff, right? And
locations. Yeah. Union.
And it's like, yeah, and it's like if I don't like, my priority is securing this location, and so the next few days, everything I'm doing is to get that location, because if I don't get that location, I don't have a movie, and then it's right. Like, and then we'll deal with the actors.
Right. And it's like, if you can make it, great. If not, I'm gonna have to find something else, because the story is the main thing, right? It needs to be told, and the locations and all these things. And that's actually something interesting that I haven't got to experience yet, because I've been doing a lot of the voice stuff, audio dramas. There's so much more when it comes to film. Like you said, locations and cameras and equipment. How did you find like managing all that? And how long does it take for pre-production? Because with us, we write the script and then we just make sure that the actors are all good and then we book the studio. How long does it take for you to pre-production?
Yeah, so for on Sun, a long time. So, Hannah and I wrote it December, I think we finished writing it last December, so
okay,
a year ago. Started talking, so like 3 months after that, I started having initial conversations with my DP, Christine Bouges, who I wanted to shoot it. So I started having conversations with her about stuff. Then a few months after that, I brought on another producer, Hannah Scott, to come on to help me produce. Then after that, we had some initial budgeting things and
yep.
Talking. It was basically I think it was in like June or July that we said, okay, it's a go. We're doing it. We're going to shoot late October. And so once it was like green lit to go, yeah. It was 3 months of like constant
calls, emails, all that stuff.
Yeah. And then securing cast, securing equipment, securing insurance,
unions,
crew.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was, and then about, I would say a month out. So like we shot at the end of October, and it was like from the end of September to the end of October, it was all day, every day.
Yep. It takes up your life. And that's something so fun, because it's like, okay, like again, back to the auditions. Like when you're just sitting around waiting for auditions and you get that audition, you really do put everything into it, because you don't really have anything mm-hmm. else going. This is my job. I'm going to do the best I can. But then it's almost like they can sense desperation, and nobody wants to work with people who are desperate. So, you know, when I've been doing my own stuff and you've been doing your own stuff, I'm sure you still got auditions and you still did your work and did the best audition you could. But it wasn't so like, this is the only thing I have. I need to do this. It's like, okay, I'm going to do my work, do the audition, and then go back to doing the movie.
Absolutely. And there's so many highs and lows in like the pre-production stage too. Like, oh, we're gonna get this, we're gonna get that.
That's its own movie. Yeah.
And now it's over and it's never gonna happen. Oh, now it's even better. Like that. But because you're so like, because of that and like what you're saying, in that time frame when you do get auditions, you're so loose about it. It's like, I don't need this. And I think that every yes. actor really, like, that's the mindset to go into any audition with. It's like, even mm-hmm. if you like it, there should be a disattachment. Is that a word? No. But, like, letting go of the attachment.
Yeah.
Letting go of that attachment to, like, I need this, because it what you said is so accurate of the desperation, and nobody wants to work with that. And I think desperation creates tension, and then tension tension kills any kind of creativity for the most part.
Exactly. So, yeah. And yeah. Like I full wholeheartedly agree with that, and I think that everyone should, even if you don't want to do your own stuff, because I know it's a big feat to make a film or whatever. Join a sports team, do something, anything, just something different to have more things in your back pocket, because you cannot put everything into acting. Like I said, still do the work, still do a good job in the audition, like take the time, but don't let it take over your life. Yeah.
Yeah, you need other outlets for the longevity of it too, right? Yeah,
totally. Yeah. So back to Sun. Okay, first of all, I have a question. Is it S-O-N or S-U-N?
S-U-N.
Like, okay, like the sun. Yeah. So what is it about? And what is it about?
Oh, it's dark. Okay. It is about a young woman who runs younger cam girls and exploits them in cam girl world, and she then has to make a decision about protecting them or protecting someone else that she loves, and it has to do with sort of human trafficking, but also from the side of social media and just sort of what happens with that world. Yeah, so
jeez, are you in it, are you acting in it as well, or
I am not. No.
Okay.
It was enough to direct and produce it.
Yes.
At one point, I was going to do like a voice thing. There was a character that voiced, but we at the last minute we cut that. Didn't need it. So I cut myself out of it.
But you know what? I've learned this as well, like doing my own stuff. It's so hard to do. That's why I don't direct anything. I'll produce, write everything. But I need to have someone directing, because doing acting and directing yourself, it's very hard, especially when you're new to it, you know? Because there's so many other things that you're worried about. You're worried about if lunch is going to be on time for the actors. Are the actors happy while I'm working? It's like there's so many things happening, and it's like that's a good call that you didn't act in it as well.
Yeah, no, there's just too many things to juggle.
So when will Sun come out? Will it be doing the festival circuit, or is it going to just kind of come out? What's your goal with that?
Our goal is to have it done by the end of March, and yeah, I mean, the goal is to put it out there and submit it, and of course it's, you know, wanting, but at the same time I, you know, don't really have much expectations because this long in the business. Well, you know, I've seen so many things that I thought were great that didn't resonate with viewers for whatever reason, and I've seen other things. You know, sometimes auditioning for stuff, and you're like, "No, this is terrible." And then 10 years later, it's been on for 10 seasons.
Right.
So, you know, I think that, we want people to see the movie. How that happens, I don't know yet.
Yeah. But same thing with the audio drama. Like, I had no idea anyone was going to listen to it. I was like, who listens to this kind of stuff? But there's such a big audience to it. And I'm, you know, we already surpassed 25,000 downloads around the world, our show. And it's just, it's so cool. And it's just crazy that you can make something, you spend so much time, as you know, on something, the pre-production, the writing, all these things. And then when you see people enjoying it and stuff, that's like the euphoria high that you have when you were on stage back as a kid. It's such a feeling that you're like, okay, it's like all this work just is, it's people are enjoying it, you know? And I hope that the same happens for Sun, because I feel like you've worked so hard on it, and it sounds really good. I feel like it's something I would like.
Yeah. Well, we hope, but that's so cool. And that is such a number, 25,000 downloads.
Right?
That's so cool.
In 50 countries. Like, what? Wild. Who would have thought? Not me.
But good on you for just taking that leap, you know? I think you have to do that as an artist. It's just, if you feel like there's a story you want to tell or something you want to do, it's just, you've got to do it.
You have to do it. And it's like, I mean, I was dropped in 2020 and I felt like the world ended. And I was like, it literally did end. But I was like, how am I going to continue? And I wasn't even like really auditioning that much. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to make my own stuff. I have so many talented friends like yourself. I feel like we can all collaborate and do something and put out entertainment for people, because that's at the end of the day what we're here to do, right? We're here to entertain. And so if we can do that, then, you know, why not? So and I chose a different medium, but it was only because I I didn't have connections and I didn't know people like camera crew and lighting guys. I was like, I can just edit it myself. So yeah. But thank you again for coming on and doing it, because honestly, like, it's one of my favorite parts of the whole show. And I just know that I'm a troll on Reddit, and I like read people's posts and stuff on it. And there's people who talk about it all the time, and they love, love, love you. And they love they are so creeped out by you. So I'm like, yes, we did it.
That's awesome. That's so lovely to hear. Well, thanks for having me be a part of it. It was such a great experience. It really was.
Thank you. Now, because this show is called Unscripted, one of my last questions is, if you could have an unscripted conversation with somebody, dead or alive, famous or not, who would it be and why?
It would be Leonardo DiCaprio.
Okay. We love that.
I know. Because I would just say, how? How did you
how?
Do it? How? That's it. How? Because, like, what he was doing when he was, like, 13, 14, 15, 16, to me, is just mythical as an actor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And some of those roles, like What's Eating Gilbert Grape and Basketball Diaries, and he's just an icon. Icon in terms of, like, how you do that at such a young age and tapping into what. That is, I don't know if that's the most interesting answer, but
no, it's
that's the one. I'm curious, who has anyone asked you? Who would you?
No one has asked me, but I don't know. I actually never even thought about it. Here I am asking everybody. I don't know who I would.
Come on, you got to pick one.
Oh my God. I mean, I guess it wouldn't be someone famous. It would be my grandpa who died. Uh-huh. I would definitely want to hear about, like, his history and his story and all these things. He came from Morocco and he had a whole life. And so I would definitely want to talk to him and just hear his story, because I find it so fascinating. Like, someone who died so long ago, it's like they lived a whole life too, you know, obviously. And it's like, I don't know anything about him. So I would love to know, you know. It's kind of a sad answer, but...
that's a great answer, though. That's a lovely answer.
I have one last question for you. If you can go back and tell yourself, your younger self, something that you know now, or just have advice for anyone that's coming up in the industry, who wants to start in the industry, what advice would you give?
It'll work out somehow, some way. Maybe not the way you expect it or want, but some way.
Totally. And if it's meant to be, it'll be. Somehow. Yeah.
Somehow. But maybe not how you expect it.
Exactly. Well, Stephen, that was beautiful. This chat has been beautiful. Yeah. I love talking to you. Getting to know you more, you know, it's been great.
Yeah.
And good luck with Sun. We'll definitely be checking you out and keeping up to tabs with that and all your other things.
Cool.
Have a good day. Man. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to that episode of Unscripted. You can follow Stephen Yaffe on Instagram, StevenYaffee. And you can follow me at Adam Merciano, both on Instagram and Twitter. But links will be in the show notes. That's it. That was the season 2 finale. Thank you so much for listening, and keep subscribed, because we will be uploading episodes whenever we have a new series. We'll be matching it with an interview of the actor of that series. So this show will constantly be getting updated. Thank you so much for listening, and like always, see you on the next one.